Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com, as always. We have two very special guests today for the Soapbox. Our first guest is Karen Katowski. Karen is a retired U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Colonel whose assignments included duties as a Pentagon desk officer and a variety of roles for the National Security Agency. Since retiring, she has become a noted critic of the U.S. government's involvement in Iraq. Katowski is primarily known for her insider essays which denounce a corrupting political influence on the course of military intelligence leading up to the invasion of Iraq in 2003. She has published two books about U.S. policy towards Africa, African Crisis Response Initiative, Past, Present, and Future, and Expeditionary Air Operations in Africa, Challenges and Solutions. Karen, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Yes, hi. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's nice to finally talk to you. I know we've articles and everything in similar publications, and I've been following your work now for several years.
And me too, in the same way. I've been following your work. And in fact, you've been really a real inspiration to so many people out there.
Oh, thank you. Karen, tell my listeners a little bit about your background.
Well, I've spent 20 years in the United States Air Force and retired in early 2003 as Lieutenant Colonel. And I retired, I did retire as opposed to just quitting and walking away. But that last year, I was at the Pentagon. I was working for Near East South Asia Policy. And I was in the sister office to the Office of Special Plans that most people, I'm sure your listeners are familiar with, who kind of wove and created and fabricated and pushed a storyline that would sell the war, that will sell the invasion of Iraq anyway, and make it sound like it was something that was really in the United States' interest to do. It was not, of course. We know that. It was in the neocons' interest to do it and possibly a few other groups of people that are not elected and don't represent the voice of the people. But anyway, it was frustrating to me to see how intelligence was being abused, manipulated, how data points that we would never make policy on were being, if they met the criteria of making Saddam Hussein look really dangerous or really scary, they would be put out into the policy world and also into the media world. And it's really funny to me how, well, not funny, but they've got Brad Manning in jail accused of leaking actual
right.
facts and intelligence information. And they're very, very upset. The D.C., conglomerate, the mob, the Republicans and Democrats, the White House, very upset with WikiLeaks. And yet the neocons in 2002 and early 2003, and that's not the first or the last time they did it, but in that time frame they were actively leaking classified information, bits of information, truths and non-truths, you know, stuff that had been analyzed, stuff that had not been analyzed, into friendly reporters' hands in order to shape policy. And none of those guys stand even accused of violating the law, as they are hoping to do with the WikiLeaks guys, Assange, and also certainly none of them have been sent to Guantanamo and tortured and kept in isolation and interrogation and lights on and you name it, like Brad Manning. So very much a double standard. It's very upsetting to me. And I did leave the military at that time, and it was because, it was because of what I saw. It was intolerable, and it was certainly nothing that I had been raised to expect of the United States military or of the United States government. But I am a libertarian, and it is consistent with a libertarian to
right.
not trust government, to not abuse its power. We expect government to abuse its power and to grow, and that's certainly what I saw, and I don't like that.
Were you a libertarian when you were in the military?
I was. I started out, I was raised a Republican, kind of a Goldwater Republican, later a Reagan. I supported Reagan in the early years, and I switched over. Well, I didn't change, really. My philosophy didn't change. My philosophy was always small government. Even though I grew up under the Cold War, it seemed to me as the Soviet Union collapsed in the way that it collapsed, was very different than what the Cold War people had been predicting. And what I expected in the military, and this is what turned me into a libertarian, halfway through my 20-year career was when, in 1989, 1990, 1991, Soviet Union collapses, and it does so in such a way that it reveals the core weakness of the system that they had. It revealed that our intelligence was wrong, our assumptions were wrong. A lot of things that justified our giant military machine had the rug pulled out from under it. And so I expected at that time the military to shrink drastically.
Right.
I expected them to shrink drastically at the end of the Cold War. Instead, what we did, we looked for new wars.
Right.
And we proceeded with the Balkan, you know, interference and supporting that violence and just one thing after another. So, and the military budget today is greater than it ever was, even in World War II. We've actually approached the World War II levels at this point in time, and we're not even engaged in any serious, you know, we have no serious threat to this country.
Well, and it's interesting. There's been some real credible studies and documentaries that kind of highlight and outline the change of, you know, the transformation of our enemy being the Soviet Union and communism into being terrorism.
Terrorism, and in particular, I think the thing that sells more easily than general terrorism is, of course, Islamic fascism, which does not exist, but that's the catchphrase. And so it's much easier for us to fear the other, to fear the people that are different. So it made a nice target. And plus, you know, come on, oil is a factor. You know, our friendly allies over there, some of them are getting thrown out of their offices, thank God. Not because we wanted them to. We were supporting them. So we have a foreign policy of, you know, messing with these countries, supporting countries that we shouldn't be supporting, propping up their leaders. In fact, we invaded both Iraq and Afghanistan in order to put our own guys in.
Right.
You know, it's just an awful thing, our foreign policy, and it's costing us a lot of money.
Well, in my introduction of you, I said that you have written two books about U.S. policy towards Africa, so you must have something to say or some insights about especially what happened and is happening in Egypt.
I have not a huge amount of insight in Egypt. I did those papers that I did, those books actually were published when I was still working in the military, so it's not something that I've done recently.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, a couple of things come to mind. First, our foreign policy establishment, which parties with our appointed political guys that we give handouts to, you know, the Mubarak crowd, the Mubarak military, you know, they're not very smart. They're not really very with it in terms of what's happening on the ground in these countries. They really hear, it's like anything, you hear who you hang out with, and they didn't hang out with the people on the street, and they didn't understand, you know, their idea is, well, Egypt is filled with a bunch of illiterate young people. Well, let me tell you, I don't know what your definition of illiterate is, but these folks know how to use technology. They can get on the Internet, and they can read, okay? That strikes me as a little less illiterate than the State Department had been pushing. And this idea, you know, we were fixated. Hillary Clinton before her, Condoleezza Rice before her, you know, the same people fixated at the State Department and the Pentagon, fixated on stability, stability, mm-hmm. stability, stability. We cannot even imagine change, particularly if it's, you know, not in our interest. We don't even imagine it. So I thought, you know, our government looked pretty stupid. The reaction to it, of course, is to support our guy because I assume Washington feels kind of bad, you know, if they have to throw their guy under the bus right away. There should be like a decent period before you throw the guy under the bus, you know, when you read the writing on the wall. So we should have known. We did not know because our foreign policy is not well served by the State Department or the Pentagon. Now, why should we have known? If we look at the nature of empires, which we are one, we're the head of a big empire.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the nature of puppet states, states that have satraps in charge, this is what happens. This is what happens. They get assassinated, killed, chased out of town, thrown out of office, sometimes violent, sometimes not so much. You know, another thing Americans in general, and the State Department is not its job necessarily, but, you know, we don't pay that much for our food, but people around the world have suffered directly from some American policies. In fact, the printing of money, the Federal Reserve policies, pushing more and more dollars out on the world, the demand, of course, of some commodities. Ethanol. The environmentalists here say, "Oh, ethanol is great." Well, you know what? Ethanol takes food out of the
right.
marketplace for people and puts it into engines. So, food prices have risen around the world, and while Americans may not have noticed it, although I think many have, it's really impacted a lot of these people. And so when you combine a long history of living under a dictator that you know to be kind of rotten. And certainly the media helps. You know, they found out a few more things. WikiLeaks exposed some of the excesses of these guys. And then you combine that with folks, particularly in Egypt, but also in, I think, Tunisia and Libya as well, people spending as much as half of their take-home pay, half of their income, just to put food on the table. And this isn't fancy food. This is basic food, so they don't starve. This creates anger. And angry people go into the streets and overthrow their government. So they withdraw their consent. And, you know, we should have been lauding them for that. We should have been praising them for doing that. We should never have been supporting the dictators that created the messes over there. You know, but our foreign policy does not reflect common sense and doesn't reflect what the American people would want. You know, we certainly wouldn't want it done to us. No, there's no American, I don't care what political party or leaning they have, that would tolerate American foreign policy being put on them. We would never put up with it. And yet we dish it out around the world and wonder when it goes bad. Well, it's very upsetting to me.
I have a question for you about that, but I'd just like to point out to you that most environmentalists don't support growing food for fuel because that's mostly about the agribusinesses.
It's the USDA and the corn lobby.
Yeah, of course. It's about agribusiness and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely a government program that helps those who are hooked into government, you know, the government class, the ruling class. And our ethanol policy of corn production, corn, of course, being a terribly input-intensive crop to grow.
Yeah.
Just crazy. But, you know, taxpayers, hey, American taxpayers, wake up. You're paying for it all. Your subsidy is paying for it all.
It actually creates an energy deficit when you produce the ethanol.
With corn, it does. Yeah, because you're talking. I'm a farmer. I'm not a corn farmer.
Mm-hmm.
We grow cattle. We raise cattle here. But absolutely, corn is you got to put more into it than you get out of it in terms of actual energy.
Well, Karen, you said
you could do a whole show on ethanol.
Absolutely, you said that the Americans wouldn't tolerate someone else putting their foreign policy on us. But how do you think, you know, the instability in the Middle East and our reaction to it, how do you think that is, I don't want to say dictated, but how do you think that kind of conforms to our relationship with Israel?
Oh, well, it's part and parcel. Our Middle East program very likely a good part of that program is designed in Israel. It is done for Israel, for Israeli interests, at least part of Israel's interests. The Likud party's interests are reflected by, you know, the AIPAC, the Jewish Policy Action Group, and, you know, yeah. So clearly a big part of it is being dictated by a foreign country, but most Americans don't really see that. The other thing that's happened, though, and I think this is actually a bit of good news, it's kind of like clouds clearing on a rainy day, you know, we're seeing how not just disrespected we are in the Middle East, but we're seeing how inconsequential we really are. Despite the fact that we've occupied two countries, that we aid numerous dictators and support them, I mean, House Assad, the Yemen guy, you know, Saleh, you know, the Tunisian guy was our buddy, got lots of military aid for Tunisia.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys that we helped, and we said, oh, well, we're helping them, or we're occupying them, or we're fighting terrorism in their countries, or we're doing all these things. We're not doing anything. And the people know it. We're inconsequential. And this is a sign that the empire is collapsing around it. Washington may deny how inconsequential they truly are, but I think what we're seeing in the Middle East is that we don't really matter, in spite of the fact that Israel, you know, would like this thing to matter. In fact, Israel has hooked its flag, I guess, to us in some ways. They have to live there, so they're going to need to deal with what they have. And what we've been doing as Americans, the American foreign policy, is simply not been working. And it's not working to make things safer. It's not working to promote free trade and productivity. It's not working to help educate people. It's not bringing equality to women. Okay, it's not doing anything that we and possibly the Israelis hoped that it would do. It's not doing any of those things. And we just don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
We can kill people, you know, and we can embarrass ourselves. But at the bottom accounting here, what we're seeing is we don't really matter. in the Middle East as much as we thought we did.
Well, we could stay in the Middle East for hours, of course. We could talk about Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and our horrible foreign policy in those countries. But I understand that you're maybe formed an exploratory committee to run for Congress. And
that,
I'd like you to tell my listeners about that. From where and why are you thinking about that?
Okay, I'm thinking about running for Congress. The 6th District of Virginia is the district that I live in. I've lived in here for a while. And we have an incumbent Republican, and he is a, you know, he's always reelected. I think he's on his 10th term. He's not a Ron Paul Republican, and he's not a Tea Partyist. And I don't mean that's a big label to put on because half the I think three quarters of the Tea Party basically went establishment Republican as soon as they got into the Congress. But this guy's an establishment Republican, and I've been tired of him for a while. I don't think he is responsive to the conservative and libertarian voices in the Valley here in the Shenandoah Valley, and we are this sixth district is predominantly Republican in terms of party registration. A number of Democrats and a lot of independents, but it's kind of conservative, it's kind of rural, kind of agricultural based. So anyway, I think it's time, and so we're looking at the possibilities of basically challenging Goodlatte in his own backyard. Now, I'll do it from a Ron Paul conservative slash libertarian perspective because that's where I come from, that's where I am. That's where I've probably been for probably all my life. In fact, I became a libertarian without changing a single one of my political views. The Republican Party, you know, left me, and as it left so many people who really believed in small, transparent government. So, you know, we're going to push for that and see what happens.
Well, and some of my listeners might... Excuse me. Some of my listeners might be thinking, oh, my goodness, why does Cindy Sheehan have a conservative Republican on her show? Cindy Sheehan's pretty, you know, left-wing and not conservative. But you're tell my listeners your views on war and empire.
Well, I'm anti-empire and anti-war. And really... you know, the wars that we have all been related to empires. You know, this country has not been, contrary to even popular opinion about 9/11, this country, the nation, has not been attacked or seriously threatened by any force capable of doing any damage. No wars on our property, on our territory. So all of the wars that we've seen, this includes World War I, World War II, all these wars have been wars of empire. You know, Woodrow Wilson in World War I, you know, joined the war late under protest by the Congress, by the people, who he promised he wouldn't go into World War I. Why? He said, if we don't go into that war, we don't have a seat at the table when they dole out the spoils of the war. So, you know, a war of empire. And that's been the history of our wars. And so it's wrong. It's unconstitutional. When was the last declaration of war? Of course, that was some time ago. World War II was the last time the Congress actually formally, you know, declared war. So this is not right. So is that conservative to hope or to believe or to have some desire that the Constitution be enforced as it's written? No, that's pretty simple. You know, you can't even put that on a left-right thing. That's actually just lawful. If the Constitution is the law of the land, we're not abiding by it by engaging in this empire building and these operations abroad. So, you know, and meanwhile, the funny thing is we can't even secure our own borders. All that money they're spending, and then if you ask them to secure the borders, the Pentagon or DHS will say, oh, well, give us more money and we'll do the borders, too. Oh, by the way, as an afterthought. Just nuts. It's nuts. So I don't know what that makes me, but I'm anti-war. Yeah, and anti-empire for sure.
What if...
like you, Cindy.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, but what if the Congress in 2001 had constitutionally... kept their obligation and declared war on Afghanistan,
guess what would have happened? Men of conscience, and there are some, and women too, in the Congress would have demanded to see actual intelligence, and they would have asked the questions that the Pentagon and the CIA should have been asking. When they asked those questions, they would have voted no on a declaration of war, and we would not be there. That's what would have happened. See, we can trust that there are people who, when they're put to the test, will do the very best they can to make the right decision. And had they been forced to do what the Constitution said, had they been forced to declare war, they would have demanded the information to justify that. Not lies, not stories, not stuff on the front page of the New York Times that turned out to later be false, leaked from the neocons. No, it wouldn't have been any of that. They would have looked at the hard facts, and they would not have been, the majority would have been unable in true conscience to vote for war. This is what I think. And the American people would have wanted to know, you know, so many people were told by George Bush and Cheney that Sodom had something to do with 9/11. If there had been debate, any debate at all about a declaration of war, we would have been shown, as American people, we would have been shown that our president and vice president had bald-faced lied to us. Maybe if it had been done in closer to real time, we might have been able to prosecute those guys. Impeach them, perhaps. You know, that was certainly legitimate. It would have been legitimate. What they did was impeachable. It's got to be high crimes of treason to lie your way into war, to lie to the people. So, you know, if the debate that the Constitution would have generated had it been followed would never have led to an invasion of Iraq. Never. Never. And it would have probably very likely not have led to any the first war back in 1991. We wouldn't have done that either.
Vietnam.
Not our business.
Well, you have more confidence in our government than I do because
well,
I think that there might be a couple of people.
I have no confidence in the government, but the Constitution followed, I think, would have worked. And this is precisely why they don't apply the Constitution and they don't, you know, go through that process. Because, really, the wars that we choose are wars of empire. They're favored by the military-industrial establishment. They're favored by certain businesses, supported by other global businesses, such as oil in some cases. You know, the oil guys say, oh, no, we don't like conflict. You know, we like to pump oil. That's not true. They like to pump oil. They can sell at a high amount, meaning that you don't want to pump too much oil. You know, we kind of manage our own control of the oil supply, in a sense, by creating conflict where none need to be in regions that produce this very hot commodity. So, yeah, there's too many people that are interested in war, and so they bypass the Constitution because people make money off of it, there's no doubt. Now,
including
you know,
our Congress members. Including many members of Congress. They go on to have lucrative careers in consulting for the lobbyists, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, I think the congressional, if nothing else, they ought to be looking at their own salaries. I think these guys should be working for pittance. You know, they ought to be living at Bowling Air Force Base in the base housing and let the, you know, we'll pay for that. Let them live in dorms if they're not have their families. And don't pay them. What are they getting money for?
Exactly.
You know, this should be something. They call themselves public servants. My God. You know? But no, you'll never hear that. No, you're right. They're
leeches.
They have a ruling
they're parasites.
Class in this country. They are parasites. You sound like a libertarian now.
I call myself a left-wing libertarian in many respects, that's for sure.
And, you know, the thing is, it's not a position that people come to lightly, but the facts support it. They are parasites. You can, you know, try to make an argument that they're not parasites. You can't do it.
Well, Karen, it's been a delight talking to you. Can you give my listeners a website or someplace they can go to for more info?
Mainly my writings, the thing I write every couple of weeks or so, I have an article at lewrockwell.com, and if other there's reprints from there at different places, Op-Ed News, I think, is one. But anyway, lewrockwell.com is the main place. And at some point in time, if we go through the exploratory phase and I have a website for the 6th District race, it will be up. We'll have that. In fact, there is a Facebook page for that. I think it's Draft Karen Kotowski for Congress or something. There's a Facebook page out there that has some stuff just as a holding place. And it's got information and links. But we're looking at just seeing how we can do it. And if nothing else, you know, we're going to put some pressure on the incumbent. And it wouldn't matter if he was a Republican or a Democrat or an independent. He is part of the problem, and he's got to feel some heat. So we're going to try to do that.
Well, I know when your colleague messaged me and asked me if I had any advice for you, I said, yeah, tell her not to do it.
He told me that. He did tell me that. And I, you know, but you did such a great job. You did
I
such
still
a great
have
job.
PTSD from my campaign against Pelosi, but,
oh my gosh,
you know, I know if you decide to
job.
Do it, you'll have a lot of support.
Yeah, well, thanks for saying that. You hit a hard one. I mean, Pelosi, my God, it was great. It was great what you did, and I think it's well worth it. I hope you don't have PTSD for too much longer because of it, because I think your voice out there is just, it needs to be heard, and I think it benefits a lot of people. I'm sure way more than you ever hear from. So.
Well, Karen Kotowski, thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and we wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you so much. Good talking to you.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Okay.
That was our guest, Karen Kotowski. Our second guest is our old friend, David Swanson. David is an activist who has also written two books, Daybreak, The Undoing of the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union, and the book, War is a Lie. David, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Great to be here, as always.
Well, you're one of our good friends, and we really appreciate you coming on and sharing your wisdom with us, for sure.
I'll try my best.
Well, the reason you're on this week is because, you know, I'm in complete solidarity with the workers in Wisconsin and their struggle, and I know that they really, you know, went out. They occupied the state house. They were very insistent upon their demands to keep collective bargaining as one of their rights as government workers in Wisconsin. And then I got a notification that there were going to be solidarity rallies in all 50 states at all 50 capitals, and it was sponsored by MoveOn.org. And that really caused me pause, still in solidarity with the workers, of course, but it seems like if there's any strong movement that has its basis in criticizing only Republicans and capitalizing off of, you know, people's misery, that MoveOn.org is in the middle of it, like they were at Camp Casey in the summer of 2005, like they were partly or maybe even mostly responsible for co-opting the anti-war movement in 2006 to get Democrats elected. And it just, you know, I think that if any of our struggles are going to succeed, they have to be almost nonpartisan, except if we find members of either political party that we can work with.
Yeah, I agree with you, of course. It's a tricky situation. You and I met back in spring of 2005 when we were going after abusive and criminal elected officials who happened to be Republicans.
Right.
And the Democrats were in the minority, and they were pretending they were on our side. And so once we got up a certain amount of momentum around the Downing Street minutes and so forth, and then once you had built what you did in Crawford, other people joined in. And we tended, in 2005 and even in 2006, to have all of these well-funded, massive organizations with insider support joining in because we happened to be going against Republicans. And this is sort of what's happening in Wisconsin, where I just within the past 5 minutes got an email from Daily Kos asking me to donate money to the Democratic Party of Wisconsin in order to help recall Republican state senators there as part of this people's movement of occupation. And it's encouraging that the people have forced 14 Democrats in that state Senate to show a little spine, at least for the moment. But there's a built-in flaw in the whole strategy. If we're only able to build sizable movements and energy when our agenda lines up against one party and with another party, then we're never going to do anything except play defense, right? Because if we never push the Democrats to be any better, the way the Tea Party and that gang pushes the Republicans to get even worse, if all we ever do is fight off the Republican agenda, then it's just going to be a question of how quickly or slowly things go downhill. Right? The labor movement never went after the Democrats for not putting the Employee Free Choice Act through when they got elected to do it and the Democrats had power. Instead, the labor unions have gotten off their backs to fight off these attempts to put them out of existence. And you can't win without an offense, and you can't have an offense if you're subservient to a party that's, you know, just visibly better than the other one.
Well, and, you know, we don't even, you know, I can't even say that the Democratic Party is better than the Republican Party. I mean, a lot of times their rhetoric is, equal to something I would think once in a while, but I haven't seen in the past 4 years that the Democrats have had control of Congress and then control of the White House and massive control of Congress, I haven't really seen much policy that has been different from the Bush administration.
No, in a lot of ways it's been worse because we've put such a focus on the president and the president is the government, and so you don't criticize governmental policies while the president is on your team. I got an email today from Center for American Progress, which apparently now supports lawless imprisonment, indefinite detention.
What?
The president's – I'm sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah, I did, but the Center for American Progress supports the military tribunals and the continuing operation of Guantanamo.
They cheer for the president's executive order, which, you know, the Republicans in Congress are actually, Congressman McKeon, are actually upset at the imperial nature of this, you know, decree from the president, but because they wish it were even worse.
Mm-hmm.
The Center for American Progress adds some ifs, ands, and buts about how it could be better, but they begin by cheering for it, it's a step in the right direction, and so forth, which you just wouldn't see if the president were a Republican. And whoever came in after Bush, unless they were going to reverse these trends and punish the crimes and undo them, was going to be even worse. And Obama has proven to be even worse, which is not to say he's a worse person or he would have been worse 10 years ago or McCain would have been better. It's to say that he's building on the abuses and the crimes of Bush and Cheney and protecting them and legalizing and formalizing them and adding to it. And your MoveOn.orgs of the world, which were pretending to be upset about torture, we're pretending to be upset about war, we're organizing anti-war rallies, but even then only in Republican districts.
Mm-hmm.
The offensiveness of having now dropped all of that and to watch, you know, John McCain and John Kerry in their bipartisan manner advocating warfare in Libya and without a peep out of these groups is just incredibly offensive to me. I used to work, before we even met, I used to work for a group called ACORN that the Republicans destroyed without the Democrats lifting a finger to protect it. And ACORN used to get in the way of things, and at the local level would even go after Democrats sometimes. But when Bush was president, and I worked for ACORN, and Bush would try to cut off funding for low-income people's heat in the winter so they didn't freeze to death, ACORN would raise enough hell to stop him. Now there's nobody to do that. And so Obama's sitting there giving his shtick about how he's never heard of ACORN, never met the people. Well, it's put out of existence. And now his budget, which you'll note, you know, Move On now, this coming week is organizing rallies against the Republican budget, which is only, you know, slightly different from the budget of the president, who's a Democrat. The president's budget cuts money just like Bush did for heat for people's homes. They will freeze to death, and there's nobody left to raise hell about it.
And greatly increases the military-industrial complex budget to the highest levels since World War II.
Yeah, I don't know about greatly increases, but has increased. You know, this will be the third year in a row has increased the biggest budget we've seen since World War II, a budget that has been increasing every year for a decade, and at the same time is depicted in the news as cutting it. I mean, you have the progressive groups that were against the war and the war budget, if not the military budget, when Bush was president, now don't even mention the fact that most of our money is going to wars and the military, and get into the nitty-gritty of what else we should cut or not cut, you know, dealing as the corporate media does just with that minority of the budget that's non-military. So it becomes this predictable debate about fiscally responsible conservatives and reckless spending liberals, whereas you and I want cuts. We just want the cuts to be to the Pentagon, not
right.
The things that are useful. And the news, when you hear any news at all about the military budget, almost universally contains this pretense that they're going to cut it. This was in the president's State of the Union. I'm going to cut the parts that the Pentagon told me I could, as if the government's not supposed to tell the Pentagon. And yet those are cuts, theoretical cuts in future years for future Congresses and presidents to their wish list, to their dreamed up what they wish the budget could be in future years, so that even after the so-called cuts, the budget for the military will keep increasing every year. It's that kind of dishonesty that would have been exposed by groups and protested by groups with Republicans in the White House and in power that you just get silence on now.
Well, let's briefly, I just want to maybe keep you for a few more minutes. The first, I think, major red flag for me about MoveOn.org was in 2007, after I had had some minor, maybe light red flags for them. But in 2007, after the Democrats came into power and George Bush asked for his first supplemental funding bill to fund the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, MoveOn encouraged their members to support that, because it was a Democratic Congress.
Yeah, in a very dishonest way, as I recall. I mean, there were so many of these, but I think it was 2007 when they put out this poll to their members because we were raising hell. They said, "Well, we'll do a poll of our members. We'll ask them," and they didn't give them a choice between between what. What Nancy Pelosi was proposing and what Barbara Lee, much less the peace movement, was proposing. They
right.
gave them a choice between what Nancy Pelosi wanted to do and what George W. Bush wanted to do.
Right.
And predictably enough, their members said, "Oh, we're with Nancy." And then they put out their statements that their membership preferred Pelosi's plan to Barbara Lee's plan, which they hadn't even been asked about. It's incredibly dishonest. And you had other groups that were sort of halfway there, like True Majority in that case, actually, if I'm getting the years right, did a more honest poll and actually obeyed their members' wishes, but you could tell really didn't want to.
Right.
And since then, you know, in the early years of the Obama era, was putting out these emails celebrating the cuts to the military budget, which had been their whole issue, their whole agenda for decades, cutting the military budget, and they're celebrating cuts to it without pointing out to you that the overall price is going up. To their credit, this year they finally have gotten that right and are and at least mentioned that they oppose the ongoing increase to the military budget. But it's pulling teeth to get honesty out of groups that see dedication to the Democratic Party as part of their agenda and benefiting their members' interests. And I think we are going to have to break free of that. I'm glad that you're there and other real peace groups are there. There's a new group called Roots Action that friends of ours have put together that is presented as being independent of the Democratic Party. I think that's the only way that's really going to save us.
Well, I think some of the members of Root Action, too, have stated that they might oppose Obama for primary, but if he's the Democratic nominee, which we know he will be, then that they're going to have to support him. So, you know, I think that lacks a little bit of integrity. But, David, what do we do? Because, you know, there's very few of us, and it seems like the groups that you mentioned have enormous lists and enormous funding, and, you know, they get a lot of, they get tons of funding from, you know, people who are part of the establishment, the status quo, that, you know, just want their half of the, you know, establishment to be in power. So what do we do? You know, we've been saying the same things. Now I know you've been saying the same thing since I've known you. You know, I've been saying the same thing and doing the same thing since we've known each other. But how can we build a better movement that does have integrity and honesty and make it about policy and vision and not about political party?
Well, I'm sure there are millions of things we could be doing better, but the fact that we've been doing it for years doesn't mean we're insane because we're trying the same thing over and over, or that we're doing anything wrong. I mean, people spent decades saying the same thing about slavery before they ended it, saying the same thing about women needing the right to vote before they got it. I think we have to keep educating people. But, you know, in the short run on some of these issues, if we can gain such momentum, as I think we may be doing on some of these wars like Afghanistan, that we can compel the Democratic Party loyalists to see it as in their own interest to join the peace movement again, we may get somewhere. In the long run, we have to go local. We have to build real small-d democracies in cities and states, and we have to force through reforms, and we have to build on the lessons out of places like Wisconsin and Cairo and elsewhere that show people that they have to take that kind of energy and determination and refusal to cave in and compromise and act on it outside of the umbrella of a political party. And if we can convince young people of that and new organizations of that and even the labor movement of that, we could really turn things around.
Well, David, thank you for your continued work and optimism and keep helping to keep us going. And thank you again for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. And I guess I'm going to see you guys in a couple months up in Charlottesville.
Yeah, I hope so. Are you coming to D.C. at all this month?
No, I'm going to be staying in California.
Well, I will be looking forward to seeing you here in Charlottesville.
Okay, David Swanson, thank you for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
My pleasure. Thanks, Cindy.
Well, that's our show for today. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my producer, Mikey, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my two guests, Karen Katowski and David Swanson, and you especially for listening. This is Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I hope you tune in again next week.
I must make my witness. I don't have to
to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. Chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Just get up from your chairs right now. Go stick your head out and yell and keep yelling, I'm as mad as hell, I'm not going to take this anymore. Just get up from your chairs.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.